You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
The American Academy for the Advancement of Science is so concerned about attacks on climate science and scientists, they held a special session called Unmuzzling Government Scientists, How to Reopen the Discourse, in Vancouver on February 17, 2012. From that session, here is one of the few Canadian climate scientists willing and able to speak out, IPCC lead author and University of Victoria professor Dr. Andrew Weaver, quoting from a work of Canadian journalist Mike D'Souza.
Prime Minister Stephen Harper's government introduced new rules to control interviews with journalists by Environment Canada scientists in 2007 that resulted in an 80% drop in media coverage of climate change science, according to an internal analysis that was released in 2010.
That's right. Most Canadians can't even name three Canadian climate scientists. They've hardly heard from them. Canadian reporters have almost given up asking the government for interviews as Prime Minister Stephen Harper rams through the tar sands operations and the Alberta oil industry he represents. Here is a short talk from Canada's top climate science reporter, Margaret Munro, for Post Media. Then we'll get an update on the situation in the United States.
As Catherine mentioned, I've been a longtime scientist in Canada, and I've been able to witness this pretty remarkable change that's happened. We used to have a very open system of government where the scientists were actually free to discuss the research with the media. But it's now become a very closed system, with government taking media and message control to, in sometimes quite incredible extremes. And we're not talking about state secrets here. There have been several cases where the scientists have not been allowed to discuss studies that they've published in research journals. And I'm going to run through some examples. But before I tell you about how bad it's become in here in Canada, I want to tell you a bit about how good it used to be. There are thousands of government scientists, and they study everything from the Arctic ice to safety of food and medicines, and they basically do science in the public interest. And not so long ago, you could actually phone them up and talk to them. You know, you say you want to do a story on their work, and they were often keen, often encouraged to actually do the interviews with the reporters. And, you know, it could happen quite quickly. You could phone them up, and within an hour, you'd be interviewing these people. It was quite an open system. And this is the kind of story and attention they used to attract. So this story ran in the Times Colonist in February 2007, and those are four government scientists, with Andrew here is on the second from the left. The scientists were involved in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They were all authors, co-authors of it. And so we just wanted to do a story on the Canadian involvement in the IPCC. And I phoned them up, said it, told them the story we wanted to do. And they said, sure, come on over. I flew over. We interviewed them, went down, took some pictures, came back. The story runs in the newspapers across the country. One of the interesting things about this story is that, as you can see, they could not... The federal scientist, like Ken Denman, who's quoted in the top there, he was not only allowed to talk about his science, but he felt free to actually give his own personal opinion that we have to act to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So, as I say, that was early 2007. By the end of the year, things had changed pretty dramatically. All of a sudden, when you'd phone a federal scientist, an Environment Canada scientist, they'd either not call you back or they'd say, I can't talk to you. You've got to go through Ottawa now. We have had a change of policy. And invariably, you'd end up in the hands of one of these media handlers from Ottawa who would phone you back or send you an email, and they'd say, okay, what's the story? They want the questions in writing. They'd say, submit your questions. And then invariably, they get back to you and say, oh, you can't talk to that person. You know, and here's some, and they'd often give you scripted lines that, you know, approved lines that you could use. So I started asking around, and because I thought, well, this is quite a big change. So I started asking around, and a source inside government leaked us this document here, which is laid out the new media protocol for the Environment Canada. As you can see, it's dated from November 2007. And it's several pages long, but I just brought up along a couple of the key pages. So here's one that gives the rationale, and it says, just as we have one department, one website, we should have one department, one voice. Now, science sort of depends on debate and discussion, right? And if you only have one voice, you don't have a skeptical voice, and you don't have proper debate. So I have a bit of a problem with that, but my bigger problem is with this part of it, is how it's going to work. It says, media relations at national headquarters will coordinate all the media calls coming into the department. So as a reporter who actually works in Vancouver, I find this a bit frustrating. Like, so if you don't make your call before 1 o'clock, you are waiting till the next day. But that's minor compared to the down to the third point there, where it talks about how the program experts are going to respond with approved lines. Now, approved lines are laundered and scripted lines, and the program experts are actually the scientists. So basically, we've got the PR people now are telling the scientists and working with them. And like it's not like they seem to jump ahead of the scientists in terms of who's making the decisions here. So anyway, we did a big story on this, and it was front page news across the country. There was all kinds of editorials and outrage about the people saying, you know, they shouldn't be muzzling the scientists. But basically, the government just sat out the controversy, and the policy stayed in force, for the most part, in Environment Canada, and it soon spread to other science-based departments. And no one has ever really explained, to my knowledge, the need for this policy. But it fits with other changes that the Harper government has made. You know, this government has got a reputation for obsessive media and message control. The government now has like a small army of people crafting and vetting media lines and doing media strategy in Ottawa. There's apparently 4,459 information officers, media handlers, and strategists working for the federal government. And it's pretty clear that for federal scientists, Ottawa decides now if the researchers can talk, what they can talk about, and when they can say it. And when interviews are approved, they're often tape-recorded by minders in Ottawa, which has got to be, I think, pretty intimidating for some of these scientists because the government's in the midst of slapping budgets, and it really doesn't like people doing a lot of talking with the media. So it's not a good situation. And there's been lots of controversy about it over the last few years. One of the cases involved this fellow, Dr. Scott Dalmore. He works in Victoria. But here he is standing in front of melting permafrost up in the Beaufort Sea in the Arctic. So in the Mackenzie Delta, up by the Beaufort Sea. Now, he works for the Geological Survey of Canada, and he's a gifted communicator. Scott has done dozens of medias with international, national media over the years, and he was the guy that you could phone him up, and he was sort of authorized to talk to the media almost. You know, he could answer your questions, and he didn't get into politics. He would stick to the science, but he was a very accessible guy, like many senior scientists in the government were. But that all changed for Scott and his department, actually, in April 2010, when Scott Dalmore and his colleagues published this study in the journal Nature. It's about a flood in Canada's north that happened 13,000 years ago. There's nothing controversial about this study, but Dalmore was told he couldn't speak to reporters without permission from Ottawa. And as government documents later showed, Dr. Dalmore he needed to get permission from his political minister's office in Ottawa. And he didn't get the minister's permission in time to do interviews on the flood study. And when this got out, it generated a lot of controversy. People called it Orwellian, and there's all kinds of editorials. Here you have the Vancouver Sun said it offended the principle of public service. The Saskatoon Star Phoenix said, when you have to assess the implications for the minister of a flood that happened 13,000 years ago, you know that government information control has gone too far. And then last year, there was an even more bizarre case involving this woman, Dr. Christine Miller. She's a federal fishery scientist, and she led a study that was published in the journal Science on sockeye salmon. That's these guys. There's a lot of concern about these fish. They're a very famed and valuable fish here on the West Coast. And a lot of them, like huge numbers of them, some years do not make it to the spawning grounds. So her study that was published in Science, it suggested that viral infections might explain why so many of these fish were dying before they had a chance to spawn. And the study was published January 14th, 2011. And 5 days before that, the Science's media office in Washington, it highlighted her study in their press pack that goes to thousands of reporters around the world. And this gives reporters several days to prepare the story before the embargoes lift on the study. So there was plenty of interest in this. Lots of journalists phoned up asking for interviews. There was people from Time, Wired, the Globe and Mail, CBC, lots of others. And they were all told by the media office at the Department of Fisheries here in Vancouver that Dr. Miller would be available, that they were going to arrange interviews, but we just have to wait a bit, but there would be interviews. But the days ticked by, and the reporters' deadlines came and went, and Dr. Miller, we never heard from her. She was not available to give interviews. And it was so strange, particularly because the government had said she'd be available. I thought, what is going on? So I filed an access to information request asking for the documents relating to her study. And 6 months later, almost 800 pages of documents were released. 800 pages were released in response to the ATI request. They gave a glimpse of this elaborate approval, or in the case of Dr. Miller, a disapproval process that she had to go through. The documents show how she'd wanted to talk to the media about her study, but she needed several layers of approval in Ottawa, first from the media office at the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, then the Deputy Minister's Office at Fisheries and Oceans, then from the Fisheries Minister's Office, and then it had to go over to the Privy Council Office, which is an arm of the Prime Minister's office. It would be sort of like asking the White House if you can talk about a fish study. So the documents show that she got approval all the way up to her Fisheries Minister's office, but it was when it landed over at the Privy Council office that all of a sudden the brakes went on and said, no, you cannot do the interview. And they also nixed a press release, and it said the study was too focused on dying salmon. So here we have a situation where the government knew weeks in advance that this study was coming out, and they could not get their act together to know whether or not she's going to be able to do interviews, to have a press release or anything. And the reporters were just so frustrated. This is a note that went, there's several notes that went back and forth between Greg Rasmussen, who's a national CBC reporter, and Diane Lake, who's the PR officer here in Vancouver for DFO. And as you can see at the bottom, he's like, what's happening to this interview? And it went on for 3 days, if you go all the way to the bottom. And at the end, on the 13th, which is the day the embargo lifts on the study, he says, you know, what is going on over there, right? What's the problem at your end? Like, I need to do this interview in, like, the next few minutes. At any rate, he never got the interview, and neither did anyone else. So when the story broke last summer, actually, on who had actually muzzled her, it was pretty big news out here in Vancouver. And it caught controversy, more editorials, you know, saying that here you have the treatment of one of the leading fisheries biologists reflects a worrisome disregard for the importance of neutral scientific facts, unfettered by political spin. And that was from the Ottawa Citizen. Then we had another case just last fall involving Environment Canada scientists who were co-authors. There's several Canadian co-authors on this paper about last year's unprecedented ozone hole up in the Arctic. Dr. David Tarasak works for Environment Canada, and he and his colleagues launched these are ozone sondes, but they basically carry instruments up several kilometers up into the atmosphere, and they can monitor how the chemicals are changing in the atmosphere. So we wanted to do a story on this study, and we wanted to talk to the Canadian authors. So I sent an email off to, I phoned Dr. Tarasak. He said, oh, I would talk to you, but you need to talk to the media office first. So I sent the little note off to the media office, and with the questions, according to their rules, and, you know, I sort of waited. And as you can see from this email here, I'd asked on the 27th for interviews, and I submitted my questions. They waited till the 29th to get back to me and say, thanks for your inquiry. While the interview cannot be granted, we can give you this response. And they give us all this blue stuff here. This is comments that we can attribute to Dr. Tarasak. So they never explain why there was no interview. You just can't do the interview. And this is pretty normal practice for the federal government, and particularly for Environment Canada. So again, we just pointed this out in our story. And again, more headlines, more people decrying what was going on. And it came up in Parliament that the Environment Minister, Peter Kent, got really questioned on the muzzling of the scientists. It got pretty heated over this issue. But the government just stuck it out, as they say. But then, in a weird twist in this one, a few weeks later, Environment Canada phoned the media office and said, oh, you can speak to Dr. Tarasak now. Like, the story has come and gone, right? But it's like, you can speak to Dr. Tarasak now. I wasn't available to do it, but one of my colleagues in Ottawa, Mike D'Souza, he did an interview with him. And again, he had to submit his questions in writing. But when he was getting to the end, he asked him, so why couldn't you talk about the study when the study actually came out? And he said, well, I'm available when media relations says I'm available, and I have to go through them. Now, I know this is very frustrating. Oh, and again, more editorials about the whole thing. So this is frustrating for the scientists, and it's incredibly frustrating for journalists. And I know several reporters who, you know, they just don't even bother approaching the federal government anymore to talk to scientists because you end up very frustrated. So what has and can be done about this? Well, science writers and journalists, like, this is not just common to science journalism. This happens to, like, a lot of political reporters are getting nowhere in Ottawa as well. So there's been a lot of public discussion about this, and there's been letters, and there was an open letter sent by the Canadian science writers to the political leaders last year asking to restore access to the scientists. But the government, for the most part, won't really admit there's a problem. They maintain that there is timely, orderly access to scientists, which I disagree with. There's been a lot of controversy, and I do think it's helping. I think there's this pushback has actually got the government to the point where sometimes you can interview scientists. Like, you phone up and everyone's like, it's so surprising that they actually can talk to you. But it's very hit and miss, and there doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason to when they do it. And they are in charge, and it's very opaque what the policy is here. As I say, I think it's very important to document these examples, so I would encourage any and all journalists to documented and help us, you know, sort of try to restore access, because I really believe that science journalism, or just journalism, depends, just like science does, on the free flow of information. And I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Margaret Monroe.
That was Margaret Monroe, science reporter for the Canadian newspaper chain Post Media. Recordings from this session are courtesy of AVEN, the Audio-Visual Education Network, at aven.com.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.